Welcome to the Roma Press Podcast with Jun Solano and Andy Mattioli.
Hello, everyone. I hope you are doing well. We hope you had a very enjoyable, relaxing holiday following the victory of Roma over Napoli and prior to this weekend's match against Juve, because this is where probably any peace of mind is going to end before we begin this absolute slog of matches that, by hook or by crook, it is going to be one emotion or the other, both of which are extreme to one end, and then the other being the exact opposite of that. So prepare yourselves, prepare your body, because we are about to enter the point of no return. That being said, thank you to all of our wonderful patrons over at the Patreon. If you would like to join, patreon.com/RomaPress, and of course, youtube.com/@IsRomaPress. Like, subscribe, all of that good stuff. We again greatly appreciate your support as we close in on 2024. Before we get to the Juve match, Andy, we can get this one out of the way. Well, we'll do the transfer stuff first. Let's wait. People enjoy transfers. I am a noted boomer when it comes to the transfers. I complain about it because I think it is far too long. I despise that they are talked about 12 months out of the year, that we do not have a single month of peace outside of the market. I despise that. Can't stand it. But given we are just a few days away from January, obviously, this is one of the periods where you are actually allowed to have players come and go. And the one that everyone now is discussing is, if you want to talk about divisive politics, religion, Leo Bonucci, you either love the guy or you hate the guy. I am not a huge supporter of his. So when it comes to this guy, it seems like with all players, obviously, but with him, it's more profound. You have two very distinct sectors that entail Leo Bonucci. You have the player, and then you have the personality. The personality, I'm just going to come out and say it. I think it sucks. When I juxtapose my time of absolutely unequivocally falling out of love with the Azzurri, the timeline, it just meshes perfectly when he and Giorgio Chiellini just started to weasel their way in and have a more profound role within the team. I can't get past that. His personality sucks. I always bring it up. The match in Torino, 2014, he scores that goal where Vidal is essentially doing you don't know hockey, right? I don't know a thing about hockey, but all I do know
know that a guy died not so long ago. That's the only...
Yeah, in the UK. Fucking hell. Well, jeez. Anyway, all I know are that the tall, more perhaps robust individuals, maybe if I did play, if somebody saw my large frame on an ice rink, maybe this would be my role, where they would screen the goalkeeper. I just remember... on Bonucci's goal. We all remember that, right? Where it doesn't somehow get called, that goal of his. And that was all three of their goals, perfectly enough, were all controversial in that match.
And now the guy who refereed that match is now the head of the Referees Association.
Yes, and again, I mention this each time. There is a wonderful video on YouTube of him being harassed by Roma supporters when he is at the airport. Not that I condone that, but I certainly, in this case, they were rather mild in their critiques of the guy. But anyway, listen, Leo Bonucci, I'm trying to navigate this with some sort of, insight that sounds great and isn't just coming from, oh, this guy sucks and I hate him because he played at Juventus. 36 years old. He would be potentially coming in, because here's the thing. This would be less of an issue if Chris Smalling were here. It would be less of an issue even if good friend Marash Kumbula had returned sooner, maybe he had the match or two under his legs, it would be less of a problem, or perhaps you would have more ability to be, you would have a wider array of players you couldn't pick from. But you're going to lose because, again, the reason Roma have to get somebody is because Emil Ndika, he's going away. He will be away from the team because of the African Cup of Nations. So it's not as if you are having to replace a guy that is playing sparingly, guy coming off of the bench, a guy that is a rotation name, a guy who can come in and come out of the starting formation of Jose Mourinho. No, this is a guy that plays nonstop, just like the rest of the central defenders. This is a guy that is out there each time, every time, and all the time. And you now are in a position where you have to find somebody who can not only live up to the amount of time that needs to be played, you need to find somebody who is at least close to the level of Evan Ndika, who, by the way, I don't know how many of you called it, but Jose Mourinho came out, and I believe it was the match, it was right after Napoli, no? Where he said this was the best performance he has ever had. He's really starting to grow into the team. I mean, I would argue, especially when you have a Gianluca Mancini who is just coming back from injury, you obviously do not want to tax him. You don't want to put him out there. You don't want to have to rely on him putting his foot all the way down to the floorboard for every single match. You want to be able to at least give him a break at some opportunities. Ndika is not that guy. Ndika is the one who is, if we want to talk about just the one who has been there all season, it has been him. He has been the one that has been able to be relied upon. If you think about it, from beginning to end of the season,
yeah,
it is he, Cristante. Can we think of one or maybe two more names that has been there alongside those two as much? I'm sure we, if our research team was not on holiday, I'm sure I could ask it to them who has been able to be relied upon as much as those two. But
honestly,
this
John
is not the guy that is just or would be potentially or prospectively coming here to you know sit on the bench, be a secondary supporter, so to speak, and have to play the occasional match. You are having to find somebody who plays significant amount of minutes multiple times per week. So how things land when I think of that being the list of criteria for what needs to be done here, how that ends up to be Leo Bonucci, don't really know. So this is one of those deals where it seems good on the surface, so to speak, because you are probably going to get him for close to nothing. His agent, he's a Lucci guy. So it's not going to be a straightforward negotiation. So this is one of those things where I look at this deal and perhaps on the surface, I can understand why it would be somewhat appealing to people. Obviously, you have the name in and of itself, Leo Bonucci, the experience, the what he brings, what the winning intangibles, they're all there. There is no arguing to that. Just when I think of this pragmatically, I just cannot for the life of me fathom how, okay, Ndika, we will see you soon. We'll see you in some weeks. Leo Bonucci, come on in. There you go. Now go play 90 minutes. And by the way, you will have to do it again in a few days. And then again after that, and after that, and after that, and after that. Does this excite you in any way, shape, or form?
Well, I think honestly with Bonucci, we have to ask ourselves, and this is something that I've mentioned on a recent live stream that unfortunately will not see the light of day after recording, but the whole deal with Bonucci, in my opinion, from how I understand, from how I interpret it from the outside, is this is a guy who's coming in to replace not a healthy Chris Smalling. He's coming in to replace an injured Chris Smalling. That's what you're getting. You're not getting Bonucci from 2015, 2017, who was a rock. He was, along with Barzagli and Chiellini, he was Juve's backbone, was one of the best defenders in Europe, and more importantly, was physically super consistent, super intact, yes. Was always there, ready to go, no matter what. This is not the Bonucci you're getting. The Bonucci from the past year, year and a half, 2 years, has been very fragile physically, has given no guarantees to whatever team he's been on, whether that's Juve or more recently Union Berlin. So it's not like you're getting a player who's, boom, ready to go and will give you the answers you're looking for. No, he is more or less providing you with a little bit more consistency, hopefully, than the current Chris Smalling. And the current Chris Smalling is providing you with exactly 0 minutes right now.
Right.
That's what you're looking to beat at this moment in time with whatever signing you make in the defense, whether that's Bonucci or anybody else. You're just looking to do better than Chris Smalling right now. So Chris Smalling gave you 3 appearances this season. He played against Salernitana, he played against Hellas Verona, and he played against Milan, and then he went down, and we haven't seen him since September 1st. That's almost 4 months now that we haven't seen Chris Smalling, and we don't know when he's going to be back. So whoever Roma are signing, they're not signing somebody in order to replace Evan Dika, who's off to the African Cup of Nations. That's Marash Kumbula. Marash Kumbula's job will be to replace Evan Dika eventually, to give you at least those 10, I know, John, those 10, 15 minutes. Oof. That's where Marash Kumbula will be. Oof. He's going to be the guy. I don't see Roma going out of their way and getting a big signing. That's January. So Bonucci in of itself, he is the guy that you sign on in order to put a Band-Aid on a broken Chris Smalling. So you're just taking Bonucci, who's had a pretty rough time in Germany, and you're putting him in the place of an injured Chris Smalling, who could potentially be out for the entire month of January, perhaps the entire month of February. Who knows? But that's the point, is Bonucci is not coming into here. I mean, whether the situation requires of him that to become a leader, to give you consistent minutes, to play a lot, we will see about that. But I think on paper, Bonucci is just the guy you get when you're in an emergency situation. Chris Smalling, who was arguably your best defender last season, is out injured indefinitely. And you're Roma, and you're looking at financial fair play, and you're looking at the settlement agreement, and your head is exploding at the thought of potentially signing somebody and then not being able to put them on the UEFA list, because, hey, that's also a reality that we're facing. In order for somebody who's coming in the January window to be signed in Roma's UEFA list, somebody must go. And that somebody can also be Leonardo Spinazzola or Renato Sanchez. We can get to that, because those are the two names that right now are being linked with a potential exit. If you manage to offload any one of them, that will enable to then put Christensen or Sadar Azmoun or anybody else that comes in January on that UEFA list. We saw last season, the only signing that we did that we tried to get on the UEFA list, besides Diego Llorente, who was a loan from Leeds, Ola Solbakken. He comes right? Yes. The whole idea was, okay, let's get this exciting young talent to boost Roma's attack. Yeah. We couldn't score to save our lives. We were like, I honestly remember people making compilations of Ola Solbakken.
Oh, yes.
You know, with the whole idea of, oh, here comes this kid from Bodo Glimt. He showed such good things against us. He's going to come in. He's going to help this team score.
Well, he purged us for 9 goals. Why won't he do it against Atalanta?
Exactly. Yeah. That was the thinking, right? And then what happened? Then you couldn't put him on the UEFA list, so he was useless in your Europa League campaign. And he scored 1 goal. That's his contribution. Now he's at Olympiacos and potentially could be coming back because they're in.
Yeah, speaking of wanting to get rid of things, yeah.
It's so difficult for a club like Roma to operate in January, that Leonardo Bonucci is far from anybody's favorite. I honestly also think from a person, like I see people saying, well, he's a leader, he does this, he does that. Well, if you look at his track record in recent years when he was supposed to be the leader, he was deplorable as a leader. If you look at his comments with regards to Moise Kean at Juve, at his just general attitude and behavior also with the Italian national team, just honestly not a great leading figure. So it's not exactly that you're getting Napoleon Bonaparte. You're getting a guy who jumped ship from Juve to Milan and then came back crawling to Juve. And then now he was desperate to stay in Serie A. His agent was shopping him around, trying to offer him to Lazio, to Roma, to this, to that.
Everywhere.
And then in the end, he was reluctantly taken by Union Berlin, where he's been quite abysmal. They've been abysmal this season. And what can you get for a player who's looking to just redeem himself just enough to make the cut for Euro 2024? I mean, that's, you know, when if that, I think that says more about him, the fact that he won't quit his national team, the fact that at the age of 36, he's still like, I have so much to give. Whereas the facts point differently, that you as Roma, when you're trying to get Bonucci, that means you're really desperate. You're in a situation where Chris Smalling is giving you absolutely zero guarantees and you are in need of just another body to make that defense work. That's all Bonucci is at the age of 36. He's just another body. That's it.
Think about how low our expectations are, because we are asking for things for players that are not a corpse. Renato Sanchez, barely giving more than Chris Smalling. We are essentially asking
Renato
you to...
Renato Sanchez with a total, I think, of like 250 minutes. Like
yes.
Something, you know,
something just...
Not obscene. A single entire game since he's been at Roma.
Not one. Think about what we are asking here. We are not asking for high quality. We are not asking for an indefinite first choice player. We are not asking for somebody with high incredible potential. We are asking for somebody who can breathe oxygen properly, ideally has both ligaments, has ligaments within both of their knees functioning properly. Maybe can be relied upon to start the occasional match.
And no Serie A. That's it. I think that's the winning factor is if you're not going out of your way to get somebody from abroad, you're getting Bonucci, who is abroad, but is, I mean, the only league he really knows is Serie A. So at least you won't have to do that. So at least you're giving somebody to Mourinho, somebody who's, you know, quite familiar with what's at stake in this league.
I agree, but ideally most managers, they are seeking the most minor reinforcements, you know, something to either act as a band-aid, as you said, or
absolutely,
you know, as something if the team is really firing on all cylinders, as something to put a little petrol atop the flame to help the spark, bring a spark. In this case, we're asking for things that are essentially non-corpses. That's it. We've gone from the days of El Shaarawy, Perotti, to this reality
for the past also. I mean, for the past 2 years with Mourinho, we've been actually quite lucky. If you think about it, Sergio Oliveira, a lot of skepticism. Then once he left and went back to Porto, everybody was unhappy. So Sergio Oliveira as a signing worked. Diego Llorente. Nobody had any expectations with regards to Diego Llorente. Here's this guy coming from the worst defense in the Premier League with Leeds United, this Spanish guy who's been a reject and a bench player anywhere he went, and now he's coming to Roma, who are competing for a Europa League trophy. I mean, come on. And now Diego Llorente is arguably your most consistent defender this season. So
yes,
there have been moments where this has paid off. It's an exception to the rule. With Bonucci, I think the case is clear, because with Oliveira, with Llorente, we didn't really know what we're getting. With Bonucci, perhaps we know far too well what we're getting.
For better or for worse, yeah.
You know, for better or worse, we know that this guy on his good day is amazing. But his good day was in 2017. Right. Pre-Cardiff for Bonucci and post-Cardiff. One could even argue, okay, that the Euro 2020 where him and Chiellini put on a masterclass, fine. But still, we're talking about a guy who is a has-been. And this, for him also personally, this is his last attempt to make a name for himself in the league.
Correct.
You know, his last stand with the Italian national team.
Well, that's the thing. You are getting him before the Euro. That is the only thing in my mind that could potentially be the saving grace of this.
Potentially on a six-month contract. That tells you all you need to know, not only about the player's intentions, but also about the club's belief in a deal of this kind. Is that
yes?
We don't want it. We don't want to think about a future involving Bonucci. Like, even Mourinho himself in a recent press conference said, if it was up to me, I would love to have a young prospect for the defense, somebody with a future. Unfortunately, that doesn't seem like it's going to be possible. That's all you need to know. Like, Mourinho a few days ago even said it. I hope. Remember when we lost to Bologna, he went out of his way to say that he's happy to stay, that he would like to change his ways of working, and that he's even ready to commit to that young player's cause free agents, over players that come in for money. He's willing to embrace that youth aspect. Well, Bonucci goes the opposite way. Like, that's
total counter to that.
It completely clashes. So whatever's going on behind the scenes, this deal in and of itself is, for me, it's a big emergency sign. It's a big SOS sign that Roma are displaying all over Trigoria, because they are in need of bodies. And Bonucci, at this stage in his career, although a wonderful player in the past, is just a body right now.
Yes. Man, the way you are speaking of bodies, that's what we need. Something very vivid in that. Speaking of behind the scenes, so this is a guy I do not like, admittedly, and I'm pretty certain he knows that. But Davide Lippi, you can tell by the surname, he may or may not have some relation to the former manager of the Italian national team. He is the agent of Spinazzola. He is letting everyone know, speaking of bodies, everybody with the balls know that soon he will be meeting with Roma to clarify the future of Spinazzola. If you had asked to me as to what I would want in regards to Leo Spinazzola, maybe even 1 year ago, I would have a much different response than the one I would have today, which is, okay, let me help you with your bags. Ciao. Would you be bothered? Because for me, I'm trying to think this season, a stretch, not just a single match. I am talking of a period of 3 to 5 matches in a row where the guy was...
Ambitious. That's 3 to 5 matches, that's very ambitious. I don't think that's...
Yeah, well him being available for 3 to 5 matches. I mean, we want to talk about Renato Sanchez. I mean, this is another guy who... I mean, he has been able to stave off injuries for the most part this season. He has had one or two minor ones.
3 to 5 games. The last time Spinazzola has been good for 3 to 5 games. I mean,
any left back. I mean,
2019.
You said there was a Bonucci pre-Cardiff, post-Cardiff. Unfortunately for Spinazzola.
Pre-Euro 2020.
Pre-Euro. Yes, pre-Euro, post-Euro. Do you remember him too, even in the early days of Paulo Fonseca, before we had one of the best transfer stories of all time happen between him and Politano, which was...
Of course. And that was the crucial moment. That's when it turned around for him.
Yes,
that's when he went on that crazy run that led to Euro 2020. Like, that was...
Yes.
And that's really, when you think about Spinazzola, people who still put him amongst the league's best fullbacks, that's what they go back to. They go back 4 years. That's 4 years ago. You know how much stuff has happened in 4 years? You probably were just getting married 4 years ago. You still have no kids. No, I'm kidding.
Do you remember there is a photo of Politano with the
scarf on the ciclette. Yeah. It's wonderful. Yeah,
I was because he mentions Libby messaged to me, and I was going back in time because I looked at all of the old messages, and it felt like we were getting the band back together or something.
Spinazzola hadn't even gotten past the airport in Milan. Yes.
Well, the thing too is,
he didn't even reach Inter's training grounds. I think I don't know. There was that whole legend of Antonio Conte's, you know, Pintus or whatever his specialist was called, who had made up these tests. All bullshit, you know, all stuff. Nothing to do with.
Yeah, they made it seem like they made him do a death march. I mean, come on.
And that's the last time. So we're talking about Spinazzola still in that same vein. Although here we are, 4 years later, almost.
And still.
And he has only a few months remaining on his contract with Roma. And the big question is, what do you do? Do you get rid of him now? Do you wait until he becomes a free agent? I honestly don't think that Roma would even think twice if somebody came up to them and said, here you go, here's 5 million for Spinazzola. Thank you very much. Goodbye. That's, for me, Roma, if they get 5, if they get 4, if they get anything at this point.
Take it and run. Take it and run.
Given his output, absolutely.
Well, it was funny too, because in that same group of messages from when he and I spoke, I'm seeing things about Real Madrid. I'm seeing things about all of these clubs interested. And I just kept, obviously, not laughing, because anytime somebody gets hurt, you never want to see anybody have their career affected negatively in any way. But when you have him, and he is admittedly, I mean, if you just search on the website, I'm sure you will find at least 1,000 worth of interviews from this guy saying, oh, well, Real Madrid, Juve, Manchester United. I'm sure we could go through a litany of teams that have come out of his mouth that he has said are interested in the guy. Listen, this thing with him, I don't know. Because here's the other thing, too. It's not just you're not getting anything from him. He earns 3 million net per season, which I know does not sound like a lot, but he is
one of the most expensive players on the roster in terms of costs involved. Still.
Between amortization,
exactly, yeah,
wage,
yeah,
one of the most expensive,
yeah, like something like around 10 million, stuff like that.
Yes, per season, correct. So, if you have somebody, as you said, that is willing to come to you, if you can get a club from Saudi Arabia that comes to you, because that is where he is getting the interest right now. The only problem is, and this is what I wrote about on the website, and this is something that Lippi is telling to people, he would prefer to wait until the summer because he would have to upend his life. He's very settled and he doesn't want to leave the country. He doesn't want to go learn a new culture in January. He'd prefer to do so in the summer. Okay, well, you know, I prefer to date Scarlett Johansson. I can't have it, okay? Tough. Things happen. And you know what? This is the price of doing business for the years. Just go back in time. I mean, the guy had barely played a stretch of 3, 4, 5 months worth of good performances before Lippi was giving an interview every other day about how, well, I don't know if he's going to renew his contract.
And also this is the result of Roma postponing this situation with Spinazzola for so long, because with Spinazzola for so long it was all about his recovery, right? After he goes to the Euro, he gets injured. The recovery lasts almost a year. And then it's all about, well, he needs more time. He's showing promising things. You have more priorities at the moment. You have to think about other positions. In the end, it's become a big issue for Roma, because if you ask me, and I think that's what most people agree on, is what has been Roma's prominent issue this season in terms of positions, it's the wingbacks. It's the wingers, fullbacks. And that starts with Spinazzola, who supposedly, by the name itself, has the goods to be your starter, has the goods to be one of the league's best, but is not. He's far from it. He's inconsistent. He's poor in decision making. He always seems to make the wrong choice, even though he's got the pace and the dribbling to get past his man. He doesn't put you in a position to succeed. And that's been a recurring issue that Roma have failed to address over the years. So now we find ourselves a few months away from him potentially becoming a free agent. And you have to hope that a Saudi club comes in, offers him a lot of money, and us just some kind of symbolic fee, because that's when you know that Roma will they will pounce on it. There's not going to be a second thought. I don't care what, you know, if Roma are worried about them not being competitive enough across the Europa League and Serie A in terms of, I don't care. Spinazzola right now is as useful as a chair in that position. So you might as well play in 10 and it will feel the same way or perhaps a little better than when Spinazzola is on the pitch and makes the same wrong decision over and over and over again. So the same talking 100% point applies to Renato Sanches, another guy who, once again, we're confronted
I'll
with
help
players
him take his
that
bags.
Are non-entities for Roma.
Yeah, goodbye.
You know what I'm saying? Like, this has been such a problem for Roma over the years, where there are players that are just there on the roster and you don't know exactly what they do.
Yes.
They take up space. Renato Sanches is another name, like Spinazzola, who takes up a spot on the UEFA list. Because of him, Rasmus Christensen, Sardar Azmoun can play at Roma's Europa League campaign. So those are guys that are taking up precious space and time.
Yeah, like, what I mean, again, and the problem too, again, these are not guys that you thought would be not first choice or not feature prominently within the team. These are guys that were expected to be relied upon heavily. And now we are here in January. Two players that probably before match day one, many probably had both of these guys penciled into the starting 11. And here we are, not even 6 months later, and we're ready
Our version of the starting lineup included Renato Sanches. Like,
love him
or hate him for his injury history, but quality-wise, we all put him in there in the starting 11, thinking, hey, this guy, if he just gets just a little bit momentum in his legs, he can be the difference maker.
If this was a guy with not quality after these amount of injuries, I mean, he would be playing in Serie C now. So clearly he possesses the quality to do so. But here we are in January, not even 6 months later, and we are saying you and I would be willing to butler these two to Fiumicino and help them carry in their luggage. That is how much I am willing to let them go. And if you think about it too, if we remove them from the squad, it doesn't even feel like you are losing hardly anything. And I can name two guys that I would prefer right now anyway.
That's the whole point. I see people saying, well, I mean, Roma can only get rid of them if somebody else comes in. Why?
Yeah, no.
Like, do you actively think that it's you're going to feel a difference with them gone and nobody coming in? Like, do you actively think that this is going to be felt? I don't know. I don't think that even Mourinho would say right now that with Spinazzola gone, you're going to, you know, officially to the media, he would probably say it. But
right.
Like, if you ask me as a viewer, do you want to see a Roma with Spinazzola in the starting lineup? My first reaction is no. Take it, throw it out the window. I don't want to see anything that resembles a starting lineup involving Spinazzola at the moment in time. I will even take Nicola Zaleski and his inability to take crosses on his strong foot over Spinazzola at this moment in time. So
put El Shaarawy out there with the remainder of the season.
Exactly. You're like, do I take a starting 11 with El Shaarawy, who can hardly do anything right in that position, it seems like, at this moment in time? Sure. So once again, like every January, we go into with these big hopes of signings that will make life easier for us, whereas the real difference maker is, can you get rid of players that are taking up unnecessarily a lot of space in this team, and whose presence is giving absolutely zero to the team's cause going forward. So honestly, this is what happens when you focus on January. You don't think about Juventus.
You go to some dark places.
We're a few days away from Juve. The match itself, immediately, in my mind, it just feels like just another away defeat coming along, you know, like the inevitable, painful, classic Massimiliano Allegri dagger straight to the
Do we even need to go into that about the away stuff? Because you've brought it up before, and I made the mistake of preparing
at the record, sure.
I suppose I didn't realize, and we'll show everyone now. I didn't realize how bad it was in relation to how good they have been. Now, we all know they've been good at the Olympico, and they've been bad away from the Olympico. But I suppose when you see the actual numbers, it is staggering. Like the amount of goals scored. 9 scored, 12 conceded away, while at home, 21 scored to 7 conceded. I mean, this is all their fault, but I should expect nothing, right? You should expect nothing simply by way of, I'm still trying to ride the high and trying to find a way, and maybe someone more involved in this world may be able to assist me with this, but a way to liquidize and turn it into a powdery substance from what took place against Napoli. I'm still trying to live off of that and inject it into myself, but the effects of that are going to wear off soon. And now, coming into this one, I mean, I'm not afraid to say it, but a draw would feel akin to a miracle. Simply based off of how they played away from home.
That's the Allianz Stadium also, you know, talking through you, because we've seen this team come out defeated so many times over there that anything that is not a defeat would feel amazing. Mm. But as you say, just even by looking at how we've performed away from home, this is something that it's so real, because so often we like to construct these narratives, and the media especially, they construct these narratives, they speak it into existence. But here it's all Roma's doing. Roma have been so bad away from home. The difference is night and day between what they do in a packed Stadio Olimpico and what they do anywhere else. And at this moment in time, with the last match day of the year right there in front of us, I want to believe that this team will take all the good things they did against Napoli and they're going to just take them and carry them over to the Allianz Stadium and embarrass Massimiliano Allegri. But unfortunately, I know better. You know, in Italian, we say, io conosco i miei polli. I know my chickens. You know, I know them. I've been there.
Oh my God! You sound like my no. Oh my! I haven't heard that one since 1992.
I've walked over them. I've nursed them. I know what these guys are all about. I know what they've done in the past. It was right there for me for the taking against Genoa, against Bologna, against Hellas Verona. We've seen this happen. We've seen this team perform away from home. It's a real thing. It's not something I made up to feel better. It's not something I made up because a lot of people come at us, like even in the most recent episode, said we were negative when we talked about the fact that there is a clear disparity between Roma playing against Napoli at home and Roma playing anybody else away from home. But the truth
is,
it's
a reality. You can't come on. It's
a reality. It's a reality that has been created by Roma. They are the masters of their own fate, including when they're playing away from home. So right now we're looking at these reports coming in from Turin and Juve have Federico Chiesa, Manuel Locatelli, both questionable. Dusan Vlahovic recently trained individually, not with the team because he had hurt his foot. They have Alexandro out. So Juve are also like just it's a all big question mark, and we almost want to feel good about ourselves because we could potentially be facing a Juventus team that is missing a lot of key players. it's not going to be that way. They're all going to recover. But still, whereas Roma are now potentially looking to have Paulo Dybala back on the bench, hopefully. So another good sign of good things to come, hopefully. But then, so you have all these nice ingredients. Everything's supposedly right there lined up for something cool to happen. And then we have the facts. And then we have, once again, Roma being Roma, having that track record. And you immediately, all the belief, all the confidence in the world is gone from you when you just take a look at our track record. It's that simple.
Yes.
You know how many points? They've got an average of 2.17 points in 2023 when playing at home. 2.17. That's amazing. Now, don't look at the average of points in their away games this year, because it's so abysmal. It's so bad that will make you reconsider everything that's
in
been
Serie A,
done.
In Serie A, it is good. Exactly one.
And that's Roma. That's not Salernitana.
Uno.
That's Roma. That's Mourinho's Roma. That's a team that you can criticize. You can say, oh, they lack quality. But you're not going to tell me that this team is just good enough to get that kind of points average when playing at home. So is Juventus, yeah, once again, is Juve impossible? Is Juve this game, is this the match that you have to run away from, that you should not even expect some kind of win? No, actually, I do believe that there should be an expectations of a result. But the problem is, again, as always, the same old story. Do Roma believe in it? Because you, I believe, as fans, most of us right now, if they were to look at what Juve are made of and what Roma are made of, they would come to the conclusion that, hey, you know what? Besides the position in the table, which it could be partly due to the fact that Juve play only once a week, there's not much disparity between the two rosters. So what the hell, you know? What do we have to lose? After all, Di Francesco's Frosinone almost beat Juve. So why shouldn't Roma hope for some kind of result? But again, io conosco I miei polli, I know my chickens.
We have to end it on that, because there is nothing that can top that. We are going to hold our collective breaths, clinch our backsides. Let's just see what happens. It is just after the Christmas holiday, just before the new year. Usually we are used to the proverbial kick to the groin, or in this case, it would be akin to I don't even know, like a cannon shot. But they have no other options here. As we said, and I did see some of those comments after the match against Napoli. But as you said, there's no escaping. There's no escaping this. The only reason we mention it is because Roma have given us the reason to do so. They have to, as I said in the previous episode, they have to build off of this thing against Napoli. You cannot allow all of that momentum to go to the wayside, build on it, I know this probably sounds as if we are such losers, but man, if they can even manage a draw, do you know how excited I will be on here in the post-match when you and I record?
Then you got Cremonese, you got Atalanta, you got Milan. So it's a wonderful streak. It's a wonderful opportunity to build something. But it's all in their hands. It's not up to us. Correct. It's not up to the media. It's not up to anybody to say something, criticize. That is outside noise. What matters is what's happening on the pitch. And you just have to pray that that magic, that determination, whatever it is that we saw against Napoli, where it was clear as day that Roma wanted a win, that is replicated at the Allianz Stadium.
Absolutely. Okay, we will be back after the match between Roma and Juve. We will chat with you soon. Until then, ciao.
Ciao.